Under the terms of the 30 years peace, Athens was supposed to give up all of its newly acquired possessions, though in practice it didn't do so. For example, it wouldn't allow Aegina to leave the league. More importantly for us, though, as we start to consider the causes of the Great Peloponnesian War, as I'll talk about soon, the one that broke out in 431, the 30 years peace also laid down some important stipulations. First, that neither Athens or Sparta was to interfere with each other's allies. Second, no allies were allowed to transfer from one league to another. That meant that Megara would have to stay in the Peloponnesian League. The Athenians don't like that. And third, each hegemon, either Athens or Sparta, could use force to deal with conflicts as they saw fit. Now, the Athenians continue their heavy-handed approach to their allies over the next decades. So, for example, in 440, Samos revolted from the league and then got involved in a dispute with another member, Miletus. The Athenians supported Miletus because it was a democracy, and they sent a large force of 40 ships under the command of Pericles against oligarchic Samos. After a 9-month siege, the Samians capitulated. And as punishment, they had to raise their walls, surrender hostages, hand over their fleet, and pay war reparations of the equivalent of 3 years' tribute. And the Athenians also set up a democracy there. Needless to say, the Athenians came to be disliked for their extortionate practices and their despotic ways of controlling their allies. In addition to what we've been talking about, they sometimes placed garrisons or governors in suspect allied cities, and they established clerarchies in allied land. Now, unlike a colony, which was a city founded in a new place, it was a completely new foundation, a clerarchy was an Athenian settlement founded by displacing the native peoples who lived there and then seizing their lands. Now, this practice of establishing clerarchies went against the very essence of the polis system, and the Athenians were hated for it. We can understand why. They were hated also for their illegal use of allied tribute for their own ends, for their disregard of the allied council or Synedrion, and for the increases in the amount of tribute each ally was to pay over the years. But despite all of the Athenians' actions, there was never any large-scale revolt on the part of the allies. Even during the Peloponnesian War itself, when the Athenians were twice on their knees and completely vulnerable, no widespread rebellion occurred. Now, this doesn't mean that the Athenians were popular leaders. Far from it, otherwise we wouldn't have been talking about the revolts that we have been. But perhaps the reason why the allies stayed loyal to Athens was because of the economic and trading benefits that they enjoyed from membership of the league. These benefits increased their own prosperity. Although the argument can be made that the league should have been disbanded after the Peace of Callias in 449, and hence that the Athenians were again acting to the disregard of allied autonomy, the future was always uncertain. There is a reason for the Athenians keeping the league together by force. This reason is the security of Greece. The Athenians felt that they had to keep the allies together, and so they acted in whatever way they thought fit to ensure this. Because you never know when Persia would come back. Whether the Athenians intended from the outset to turn their league into an empire to counter the Peloponnesian League, or whether this was something that developed over time, is difficult to answer. My own view is that it developed, but that it didn't take too long to develop. So also hard to answer is whether the Athenian allies didn't realize the implications of their oath of allegiance. Or did the Athenians take advantage of them from the outset? Well, it's a bit of both maybe, though I hate to say that because now I'm fence-sitting. The First Peloponnesian War was merely a prelude to the Great One of 431 to 404. And we're now at the cusp of that, so to speak. But before we consider this war in any detail, we're going to look at the tremendous political change in Athens that unwittingly the imperialistic policies of people like Cimon and Themistocles brought about. This change was the opening of the door to direct democracy, the result of the legislation of Ephialtes in 462. We need to know about this change so we can better understand the workings of the democracy during the Peloponnesian War era. What did direct democracy actually mean? And what did it mean for Athens that the people were sovereign in the state? So in our next three lectures, we're going to return to our theme of democracy. Because when we get to the Peloponnesian War, I'm going to argue that it's the radical democracy that lost the war for Athens. That's right, a bit of a heresy on my part again. The political system that the mass of the Athenians cherished the most ironically did the greatest damage to the city. It wasn't losing that final battle that lost the war for Athens. It was its political system that lost the war. And we'll start to find out how and then why beginning in our next lecture. Thank you very much.